This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight...
This shows that teachers matter.
That's Peter Tabachi, the first African to win the prestigious Global Teacher Prize. Details coming up also. Aid is moving into rural parts of Mozambique, Malawi, and Zimbabwe more than 10 days after Cyclone Idai struck. And the United Nations Human Rights Office is urging the government of Mali to investigate the killing of more than 150 people. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, more than 10 days after Cyclone Idai struck southeastern Africa and his aid is moving into rural parts of Mozambique, Malawi, and Zimbabwe. The storm has left more than 700 people dead in the three countries. Floods following the storm have displaced hundreds of thousands of people. In Mozambique alone, the United Nations says about 1.8 million people were affected by the storm. Yannick Michel is a journalist in Mozambique's capital, Maputo. He has been covering this story since the storm hit. He spoke with my colleague, Kate Pound-Dawson, a short time ago about the situation in Mozambique.
Yesterday, the government issued an announcement, which was made public. There were still 158,563 families remaining to be saved. The latest death toll is around 447. About 3,140 teach rooms have been affected, and about 90,000 students have also been affected. At this point, 45 hospitals are completely flooded. 100,000 are still isolated, remain isolated, and the rains are really blocking and hindering, preventing the rescue operations to reach them, because it is still raining. Yesterday, the forecast told us that it's going to still raining until the beginning of the month of April.
I wanted to ask if aid is getting out beyond the coast and getting into some of the rural areas.
They are able, because yesterday were rescued about 700 people, for instance, in the district of Buzi. Okay, it's on the countryside. It's a rural area, and the district itself was completely flooded. These people remained at the top of buildings until yesterday.
So, what are some of the primary requests that aid agencies are making? What are they trying to get in first?
Aid agencies are requesting for medical treatment. Medical treatment. It includes the medical doctors and medicine, nurses, mosquito nets to prevent malaria, and water purifying packages to purify the water, and rice oil. Let me add something. There is a Chinese boat that has just arrived in Beira Port with about 500 tons of rice. And the Chinese ambassador in Mozambique promised to deliver more 5,700 tons of rice to cover.
That was reporter Yannick Michel in Maputo speaking with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson. Zimbabwe's government said today that the number of deaths related to Cyclone Idai has stopped 180. The number could go higher as authorities are still trying to determine how many are missing following last week's rains. Columbus Mavunga reports from Chimanimani, about 500 kilometers southeast of Harare.
Addressing visiting United Nations officials in the most affected area in Zimbabwe, Lloyd Kasima, the acting district administrator for Chimanimani, said Cyclone Idai deaths now stand at 181. He said authorities are trying to figure out how many people are missing.
Traditionally, we used just to experience some minor excessive rainfalls, and we could just manage that and control. But this disaster was too much for us, was too big. The rivers flooded, creating new rivers, new streams. In the process, a lot of people were swept away in their homes. Some died, and some up to now are not known where they are.
Kasima said the situation has been made worse by power outages, which has hampered communication and flooding that cut off streets and highways. The British-based charity organization Save the Children is trying to determine how many of the missing are children. Here is Sophie Hamantishe, the organization's spokeswoman in Zimbabwe.
Right now, as we talk, the actual numbers of children who have been affected is not known because the statistics are difficult to come by. We don't even know how many children are missing in total because you have statistics coming from different areas and some are conflicting. The major challenge that we are having is accessing the people who need the much needed aid that we want to deliver. The areas are inaccessible.
She said, once all roads become accessible, statistics would be available of who was actually affected. The Zimbabwean government Tuesday said more than 40,000 people had been left food insecure by Cyclone Idai, while more than 7,000 had their homes destroyed. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Chimanimani, Zimbabwe.
The United Nations Human Rights Office is urging the government of Mali to investigate the killing of more than 150 people and to bring the perpetrators to justice. The agency says an attack Saturday in Ogosagu in the Mopiti region of central Mali marks a significant increase in violence. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The United Nations reports that over the past year, fighting between the Fulani and Dogon ethnic communities has resulted in the deaths of some 600 women, children, and men. Disputes over land and water between Fulani herders and Dogon hunters are common, but the fighting has grown increasingly violent. The Human Rights Office reports survivors of Saturday's attack, most of them Fulani, said Dogon traditional hunters attacked the village of Ogosagu with automatic weapons and hunting rifles. Human rights spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani says some members of the Dogon portray the Fulani as supporters of violent Islamist extremist groups.
I understand that many of these communities, either they're using this as a pretext for intercommunal violence, or they are painting themselves as so-called self-defense groups, and they're taking the law into their own hands and getting rid of what they perceive to be the threat of violent extremism, which of course ends up meaning that many children are mercilessly killed, people's bodies are thrown into wells, people are burned alive in their homes.
Shanvatsani notes the Dogon are the only group accusing the Fulani of supporting Islamist militants. She says the Malian government has launched investigations and made arrests in the past aimed at stopping the cycle of violence, but she says none of the cases ever went to trial. Shamdasani says her office has deployed a team of crime scene investigators and human rights officers to the affected villages. She says they will be conducting interviews to establish what happened. She says the UN Rights Office will support the government to carry these investigations forward. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz, on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Fifteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. More than 10 days after Cyclone Idai struck southeastern Africa, aid is moving into rural parts of Mozambique, Malawi, and Zimbabwe. And the United Nations Human Rights Office is urging the government of Mali to investigate the killing of more than 150 people. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. A Kenyan math and physics instructor has become the first African to win the prestigious Global Teacher Prize. It was founded to shine spotlight on the work that teachers do all over the world and to influence debate on their status. First awarded in 2015, it has become an annual award, as Catherine Nambi reports from Dubai.
The winner of the Global Teacher Prize for 2019 is Peter Tabachi. Congratulations, Peter. I would like to invite His Highness Sheikh Hamdan bin Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum and Mr. Sunny Vaki to the stage to present the...
From a humble teaching background in little-known Kericho Mixed Day Secondary School, Peter Tabachi beat thousands of nominees to take what many have called the Nobel Prize for Teaching. Tabichi's victory, the first for an African teacher, was announced during the 7th Global Education and Skills Forum in Dubai.
Africa! Kenya! Africa! Africa! Africa!
The prize is a brainchild of the Vakei Foundation. Tabichi is the first African teacher to win, and he could not hide his joy.
It is a great surprise, not just for me, not just for Kenya, not just for Africa, for the whole world. This shows that teachers matter. Teaching is a noble profession. I appreciate this great recognition on behalf of all the hardworking teachers throughout the world who have transformed and are still transforming the lives of learners and that of the society in different ways.
Tabichi already gives away 80% of his monthly income to help the poor. He has pledged to use the $1 million prize to provide solutions to challenges such as lack of classroom facilities faced by his learners in Pwani village in a remote semi-arid part of Kenya's Rift Valley.
This might not transform me in any way, but it is going to benefit the people that I serve. It's going to transform the children, okay? Because those are the ones facing the challenges.
In a televised congratulatory message, Kenya President Uhuru Kenyatta expressed optimism that the award will greatly uplift African teacher standards.
You chose to teach in a remote part of Kenya, and you chose to transform lives in such situations, a choice that I'm sure was difficult. You give me faith that Africa's best days are ahead of us, and your story will light the way for all future generations.
The Global Teacher Prize is the largest prize of its kind and was set up to recognize one exceptional teacher who has made an outstanding contribution to the profession as well as to shine a spotlight on the important role teachers play in society. Tabichi's dedication, hard work, and passionate belief in his students' talent has led his poorly resourced school to emerge victorious after taking on the country's best schools in national science competitions. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Dubai.
Security was tight today as the Comoros wrapped up counting for the controversial presidential election that drew criticism from the opposition and international monitors amid allegations of cheating. Protests yesterday in the capital of Moroni were broken by police using tear gas and rubber bullets. 12 people were reported injured. Opponents said they were starting a campaign of civil disobedience against President Azalia Sumani, who has been accused of forcing through constitutional amendments to stay in power and increase his clout. Azali's supporters have dismissed the allegations and called the accusations of cheating pathetic. A joint statement issued by observers from the African Union, the COMESA East and South African Bloc, and the Eastern Africa Standby Force condemned incidents that kept voters from exercising their voting rights in conditions of calm. The tiny poverty-racked island nation of Comoros has been rocked by 20 coups or attempted takeovers since independence from France in 1975. School violence is on the increase in South Africa, especially in Gauteng province, which includes Johannesburg and Pretoria. Already this year, some pupils have been arrested, some as young as 13. Gangsterism and social ills have been named as causes behind children turning to crime. Authorities are worried as they try to curb the trend. From Johannesburg, Yashir Ramprasad has the story.
Knife attacks, gang violence and suicides are ravaging some schools in South Africa. Several pupils have died this year, while several others have been arrested for the crimes, some as young as 13. It's difficult to put numbers to it, as so many incidents have taken place in the past few weeks. Johannesburg schools are being especially hard hit. Government is trying to get a handle on the situation, but it's proving to be quite difficult. Minister of Basic Education in Gauteng, Panyaza Lesufi.
I must be honest, my heart is entering a stage that has not entered before of consoling families rather than issuing report cards that congratulate families. I'm now issuing death certificates instead of issuing report cards, and that hurts me. It hurts me so much that within the first term of the academic year, if you include all the incidents that have happened in our school, learners committing suicide and others that are attacked and other things, it's becoming heavy on us almost daily. But we'll continue to soldier on. We just have to provide all the relevant support.
NGOs working in communities say school violence seems to directly stem from behavior displayed in communities where the pupils live. Colleen Strauss from the Sinoville Crisis Center explains.
I think it's a couple of factors that we are seeing happening here. We can see that what's happening in our communities and families has got a direct influence on what we are seeing being expressed in or experienced in our school environments. If we look at the communities, violence, unemployment, drug abuse, all of that has an influence on our children. And now our children are displaying these behaviors in schools. And now we're asking what's happening.
Strauss says more emphasis needs to be placed on fixing social ills in communities. Counselors are also needed at schools to help teachers and principals work with children who display violent behavior. Lesufi says government is working on changing legislation to ensure children who commit crimes are not let off with a slap on the wrist.
I'm of the view that we need to review our systems, not necessarily because there is a crisis, but there's a situation that is uncontrollable. And to review those processes, it cut across everything, legislation, regulation, behavior, and most importantly, how do we strengthen safety utilizing law enforcement? Because I think that the education department must hire people carrying guns to be outside the school. It's not going to assist. We are now attracting other people to come and fight for those guns. So you can imagine that we are indeed under pressure. So we just need to review everything. We must not leave any stone unturned. And I'm quite excited that there's a legislation that is going to go to Parliament later this year, that we as Gauteng, we are going to go there to make that legislation to have teeth to bite and also to deal with misbehavior of learners within our schools. Gone are the days to treat some of these things as children. People that can kill are no longer children. We need to respond appropriately and correctly. This thing of thinking that people kill and we must give them roses. No, no, it's not going to assist. If you kill, the law must take its own course.
In the meantime, pupils and staff at schools live in fear. Aside from violence from their own pupils, they also worry about criminals who rob schools of computer equipment and money. One such incident saw a whole neighborhood in Johannesburg on lockdown last month. Several men entered a school posing as parents and robbed officials of money meant for a school trip. A shootout ensued where some robbers were killed. It left pupils and staff traumatized. Many schools are now employing private security or getting neighborhood security guards to patrol the area more often. This, while government comes up with concrete plans to address the problem. I'm Yashira Rampasad for VOA News in Johannesburg.
The United Nations has appealed for $184 million to help people displaced by Cameroon's separatist conflict, including $35.4 million that is urgently needed to save lives. Estimates put the number of internally displaced people in Cameroon at 437,000, plus more than 35,000 who have slipped across the border into Nigeria. The UN Refugee Organization said in a statement that the situation has deteriorated over the last 13 months, with fears that more people will be displaced in the coming months. Many of the clashes have involved tensions between Cameroon's English and French-speaking regions. The International Crisis Group says at least 500 civilians and more than 200 members of the security forces have died in clashes, attacks, and a government crackdown. And at least one person was killed and two others injured in a blast in Mogadishu today. Witnesses said the explosion was caused by an improvised explosive device fitted to a car. It exploded near the Somali capital's busy K4 junction. The explosion came just 4 days after a complex attack by Al-Shabaab on a compound housing ministries of labor and social affairs and general works, reconstruction and housing. The attack on Saturday killed 15 people, including the deputy minister for labor and social affairs. Meanwhile, the Al-Shabaab militant group says they have executed 5 men in the Southwest Bay region yesterday for alleged spying. 4 of the men were accused of collaborating with U.S. Central Intelligence Agency, while the 5th was accused of collaborating with the Somali government's intelligence agency. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Cyclone Idai battered parts of southern Africa, wreaking havoc and creating a massive humanitarian crisis. An in-depth look at how the international community and the local governments are dealing with this evolving crisis on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello Africa, this is James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5 and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.